One of our greatest fears is speaking in public. In fact, one piece of research found that in a list of our most significant fears, public speaking came top and death came third. We're afraid of making a mistake, or maybe several, even lots of them, and looking silly in front of people or even one person. In a business environment, we're fearful that this leads to us being thought less of, laughed at, even ridiculed, as well as losing existing or potential clients and or other great opportunities, being portrayed as incompetent in the media and or in the eyes of existing or potential investors, and even being demoted or fired. These are high stakes, very unhelpful, self-imposed high stakes. Your audience can be a lifeless lump of inactivity, insularity, and indifference. But by engaging them in the right ways, you can transform that. So your audience can and should be a stirring source of interactivity, insight, and inspiration. I've been paid to speak in front of thousands of people over the years, from varying cultures and countries, ages, and professional and personal backgrounds. And by the same token, I've seen many other speakers perform, some wonderfully and some dreadfully. The first thing to remember is that your audience responds to you and how you feel about yourself and your subject as you portray both at the same time. If you're nervous, it makes them easy. If you're relaxed, particularly when things go wrong, then they admire you even more for not being fazed by the situation. So rather than distracting their minds with your uneasiness and nerves and lack of confidence, they can focus on what you're saying. And that's the point of your appearing in front of them, surely. Research has shown that persuading people in a large group is easier than persuading an individual, as the more people there are in a group, the more likely they are to comply with whatever the leader is saying. In group settings, people tend to be led by the unconscious minds of the rest of the group, and the average intelligence of the unconscious mind is that of a six-year-old. Another great tip that helps you overcome any fear you may have when in front of a group of people is this: understanding and using the audience appreciation paradox is what I've termed it as. When people in an audience are sitting there looking at and listening to you, they tend to do so impassively. Their faces don't show much emotion most of the time. Therefore, it's very easy for you to think that they're bored or even don't like you. The thing is, you've been that person in the audience, haven't you? Unless the speaker really is boring and or unlikable, you've sat there so often thinking that they're not only very likable, but also very interesting and maybe also amusing or even hilarious. But you're not always going to express those positive and appreciative emotions facially, hence the audience appreciation paradox. Now, if someone in my audience is sitting there with a manically animated and gleeful look on their face, they begin to worry me. I may even call security. You beat the bogeyman of public speaking by using its greatest weapon to your advantage. When channeled properly, fear powers your performance in a way that makes people think more of you, laugh with you, and engages existing and potential clients and other key people in such a way they increasingly buy into you. You then begin to find yourself more wonderful and enriching opportunities. It leads to you being more publicly perceived as someone of great note, who also strengthens the support of existing and potential investors and other important people. And this means that you're more likely to get promoted and rewarded financially and in other ways. You help yourself overcome unhelpful fears by focusing on these five key points. 1. Your audience is crying out for presentations and conversations that are colourful, communicated with conviction, coherence, conciseness, clarity, and, depending on the situation and the people involved, a bit or even a lot of comedy. Your audience wants you to do well. They like being enlightened, energised, and ideally entertained by you. Alas, the vast majority of people presenting in business, whether at an external presentation, an internal meeting, or in a networking scenario, don't do this. If you do present well, you stand out for all the right reasons. 3. Your audience is also more grateful than you can imagine that it's you making the presentation and not them, so they want you to do well. It not only informs them, but can also inspire them. 4. By making a presentation, having that difficult conversation, or networking and socializing with people you don't know, you increase your chances of achieving something positive in a way that others can't. This is because you're venturing bravely into arenas that most people convince themselves are too unnerving for them. 5. And don't worry if you don't get it right on the first occasion or even on other occasions. Even the best professional speakers, comedians, and other regular presenters have their off days. But what both you and they learn from these experiences, as well as the great ones, constantly help you improve your skills as a communicator. And this, in turn, strengthens your confidence, which also helps reinforce your ability as a charismatic communicator. Small audiences. With audiences of under about 30 people, it's vital that you engage all of them visually and at varying times during your presentation, because a gathering of this size is more cozy. You need to engage every individual there. Not doing so magnifies your lack of connection with them. Medium to large sized audiences. With audiences where there are hundreds or thousands of people present, you're not going to be able to engage with each one individually, visually or verbally. You only have the chance to visually and verbally connect with blocks or groups of people in stages. So try splitting your audience into four blocks: front left, back left, back right, front right. Vary the order in which you look at them, anything between 5 to 15 seconds per block. You should also vary it with each block to look at different sections or subsections of a block of people. So certainly with a medium-sized audience, no one small section or set of individuals feels left out because you haven't looked at them. With large audiences, some of the people in the rear blocks look like small shapes and dots to you, and so this makes your job easier. From their point of view, you appear to be looking at them by virtue of the fact you're looking in their direction. Interaction. You can engage your audience in various ways. You can give a barnstorming speech. That's great. But always be aware of the context of the situation in which you're presenting. For instance, if you're one of a series of speakers at a day-long event, then imagine it from the audience's point of view. If you're one of about five or six speakers talking for about an hour, say, then that can be quite draining for your audience because of the concentration needed to absorb all you and all what the other speakers have to say to them. And that's if the speakers are riveting specimens who speak with an enthralling vim and vigor. But as we know from often enthusiasm-sapping experience, this is certainly not guaranteed. So making your presentations interactive can inject some life into a sometimes psychologically semi-conscious audience. And if done well, and not cheesily, by the way, then your audience is much more likely to be grateful you've energized and then engaged them more proactively, think of you more warmly and more admiringly, remember and even recommend you as someone worth listening to, and more. The layout of a room or a conference hall shapes what you're able to do as well. If you're in a massive conference hall and it's theater style, then your audience can only realistically do exercises involving those next to them. So they can pair up or form threesomes, depending on the number in their row. At an event where they have cabaret-style seating, then it's much easier to split people into pairs, threes, fours, or into teams made up of those at their tables. Remember that very few members of your audience are likely to want to come up on stage, even more so in front of a huge audience. The fear factor may be too much for them. The exception to this can either be a member of the senior management or some egomaniac, sometimes one and the same. And be prepared also for some of them to try to take you on to make themselves look good at your expense. When I've done interactive sessions that have involved getting someone up front, I've had people, or men interestingly, who thought they could take me on because they wanted to outsmart me and look good at my expense, thereby boosting their already sizable egos and even their professional prospects, and or to look good for some woman or even women that, you know, have taken their unsettling fancy. So think through all the bad and even bizarre things that can happen if you get someone up front, as well as how well things can go. For instance, things to reflect on and plan for include: what do you want to demonstrate or illustrate? Is this an effective way to do this? How many people do you need to make this work? For instance, when I'm giving a demonstration of networking choreography, I get two people up on stage, followed by a third to further demonstrate what to do when trying to break into or even out of a group, and more. How long does it take to do? Where should or can it take place? What happens if no one volunteers to come up? In this scenario, get to know, at least observe people before your session. So trust your instinct. There will be some people you know you can work, play, have fun with. They'll tend to be the more outgoing, the more garrulous, and the warmest and most natural and the most at ease with themselves. What happens if the personal people who come up at the front try to dominate the situation, look cleverer than you, embarrass you, or do something alarming? Now, I've never had anyone who took their trousers down, broke wind, or started swearing at the rest of the audience, or even a combination thereof. But if they did, I, like you, would have a series of saver lines and actions to take. These include comebacks and put-downs. You can point out that that's not how to do what you're wanting to illustrate, and then say, "Thank you, we enjoyed that almost as much as you did," and guide them off stage warmly and with polite firmness. You then need to ask someone else to replace the idiot, as otherwise it could look like you're afraid to demonstrate your key point. So immediately take control and ask for another volunteer who, and this is where you can make a lighthearted quip referring to what happened with the idiot before, feels better with their trousers on if they took their trousers down, has a more robust and discreet digestive system if they broke wind, or has yearnings to be more of a poet laureate than the previous participant if they swore or were unintelligible, etc. Please, 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 and that's a lot of pleases, don't be cheesy, naff, or crass when trying to get the audience to interact with each other and you. For instance, don't do what some presenters still do, and most audiences dread this one, and that's to get them to massage each other's shoulders and even heads. This is a cliche, extraordinaire, and a lazy option. It's also just awkward and embarrassing. It makes most, if not all, those coerced into this false bodily bonding cringe. Not only that, but it can also be hugely inappropriate in some cultures. Now, I'm not saying don't challenge and push them. Do that for sure. But do so in a way that makes them nervous for the right reasons, because even though they know they have to make an effort to interact intelligently with those around them, who they may not know and therefore feel at ease with, that they also realize they're going to obtain a worthwhile and practicable skill come learning point. Now, what are the three audience types? Okay, there are three different types of people in your audience who you need to appeal to seamlessly using different approaches to engage all of them. The soft and slow, the nice and normal, and loud and fast. Now, soft and slow person, these will be the sort of quieter, more introverted members of your audience. They prefer people whose tone and voice and pitch is softer and slower and more measured, as I'm being now. They can feel audibly and visually battered by people who are loud and fast, kind of like me, and the louder and faster talking types who are always very high energy or can be high energy a lot of the time. To appeal to this part of your audience, you need to soften and slow your voice, not in a way that sounds like your batteries are losing power or in a manner that patronizes them. This is especially the case if you're a loud and fast speaker. A soft and slow person can struggle more with a loud and fast speaker than the other way around. Nice and normal. These audience members can be a mix of introverted and extroverted people who speak at a normal pace and volume and pitch, as I am now. They can deal with the slower and softer tones as well as the faster and louder vocal manner of the high energy speaker. Now, to appeal to this part of your audience, you need to speak at a normal volume, not too quiet and not too loud, and in a measured and paced way, again, not too fast and not too slow. Loud and fast. This part of your audience tends to be extroverts and quite simply can talk more loudly, more quickly, and more emphatically than the other two groups. They also tend to be high energy. Now, a lot of motivational speakers can be like this. Some, however, overdo it and equate volume and speed of speech with being energizing, entertaining, and educational. Sad but true. Although this group can be the most engaging when speaking, they can get carried away and lose even the fellow loud and fast listeners in their audience. So to appeal to this part of your audience, you need to employ some pepper and spice to energize your presentation delivery. If you're monotone and vanilla, you lose them through either impatience or indifference, if not both. Appealing to all three types. So to engage all three types of people in your audience, you need to vary the pitch, the pace, and the volume of what you say as well as how you say it. Imagine a line, a medium, which is where the nice, normal people are, with the loud and fast above it and the soft and slow below that median line. Now, your speech should follow an undulating snake-like curve that winds its way through all three sectors and lines on terms of sound waves and volume and everything else to engage all of your audience as much as possible. Okay, please pause this program for now and do the relevant accompanying exercise that comes with a worksheet for this lesson. This is important because this exercise is going to help you embed what you're learning here psychologically so you become much more effective practically. In other words, how you now apply these skills to become more successful in the real world. And when you've completed this exercise, then please continue enjoying the lesson. Thank you. So what have you learned in this lesson? How you can avoid the very unhelpful self-imposed high stakes that most people impose on themselves when it comes to speaking in public, your audience response to you and how you feel about yourself and your subjects as you portray both at the same time. You've learned how to overcome fears about how your audience reacts to you with the audience appreciation paradox, as well as 5 are the key factors to help you focus on the audience and your presentation in the right way, rather than focus on your fear about how those listening to and watching you might be thinking about you and your presentation. You've discovered how to engage small as well as medium and large size audiences. You picked up some useful tips of how best to engage audiences and make your presentations engagingly interactive without being naff or being shown up. And you've learned how to deal with tricky members of your audience who might want to show off at your expense. No more. Their days are numbered. And you've discovered the 3 different types of people in your audience and how to engage all of them and their different communication styles. Now, coming up in the next lesson, you discover how to give presentations that win hearts, minds, and business.